With your permission, we'd like to talk shop for just a moment.
Because we've got a good racket going, you're not going to be able to touch our own.
Oh, okay, so you've got a racket going.
Cookies are not the only food. I tell that to my children all the time.
It's time for the publisher fight. It's time for the publisher fight.
Here's a man that really appreciates that new England pound.
Hi, how's it going, and welcome to the Video Week podcast. My name is Vincent Flood. I'm the editor-in-chief at Video Week, and my guest for this episode is Justin Sampson. Justin is the CEO at Barb. Barb is the UK measurement JIC, that's Joint Industry Committee, for TV advertising. We discuss what Barb is and how it operates, covering everything from who owns it, how panels are created and operated, and who influences it. I think there's some misconceptions in that area, or alleged misconceptions, certainly. We also talk about zero-rated spots, which is when smaller channels or pieces of content don't get picked up by measurement panels. That's something that can be to the detriment of smaller players, of course. We also discuss the fit for TV definition. What is fit for TV when we're talking about content? Which is a more complicated question in an age when user-generated content is often very high quality, occasionally at least, and it can often be comparable to TV content, or even better in some circumstances. We also get into Barb's relationship with Origin, a measurement product which was created by ISBA in response to the WFA framework. ISBA represents UK advertisers, and they're building Origin with a view to creating reach and frequency, particularly across all different types of media. On our side, we've got a few events coming up that I should be telling you about. We've got Video Week Cologne the day before to Mexico, 17th of September. We've got the European Video Awards in London on the 27th of September. Even if you haven't been nominated and you'd like to come along for the night for a bit of fun and networking, you are welcome to join. Then we're off to Spain in early October for TV Rise, the CTV Leadership Forum. That one's very close to sold out. I think we've got one or two places left that might even be gone by the time you listen to this. But if you do want to come along to that one, do let us know. Jumping on to November, we have a new event from what will be a new publication called Future Week. Future Week is going to be our new AI-focused publication, and this first event is called Future Week AIM. It's AIM with two M's, and it stands for AI in Media and Marketing. That one's going to be on 13th of November at 1 Birdcage Walk in London. I know with AI, many have had a flight or fight response. I think many people have been choosing flight when it comes to AI, which I can understand in some ways. It's a very overwhelming topic with huge implications that could potentially upend everything. I suggest that you do join us on 13th November and choose the fight option and get the inside track. And it is still extremely early in AI, but things are going to move extremely quickly. So I would strongly advise getting yourself along to that one and getting the inside track on what to expect and future-proofing both your own interests and your company's interests by getting involved. Then the following day, we've got Video Week Roadmap on 14th of November, 30 Euston Square in London. This used to be a smaller event for us. It's grown into a quite large conference. I think we had 400 people there last year, full house for the entire day. And Video Week Roadmap looks at what to expect in the coming year in video and TV. So hope to see you there. Right, now I'll cross over to my conversation with Justin, and I hope you enjoy. So, Justin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Vinny. Good to be here.
Likewise. Great to have you here. Okay, so we usually kick things off by asking people how they got to where they are today. So how did you, what was your entry point into the industry?
So I actually didn't do well enough to go to university. So I spent a couple of years sort of late teens working in a telemarketing business. And after I got a couple of good years experience under my belt, I thought marketing's a word that interested me. So I picked up a copy of the Media Guardian, which in those days was obviously only available in print form. And I saw all these jobs for marketing execs, and I ended up in a publishing company. So it was magazines, Kerrang, Travel Trade Gazette, a really wide range of interesting titles. I then got into commercial radio. I spent 12 years at the Radio Advertising Bureau, helping the commercial radio sector grow from 2% of ad revenue to nearly 7%. Then a couple of years at ITV, then I spent some time working for one of Barb's suppliers, and I've been at Barb over the last decade. It's kind of a bit of an accidental tourist, and I'm often reminded of what Steve Jobs said in his seminal speech to the graduates of American University. I can't remember which one. He said, "You can only join the dots looking back." And if I look back, I can kind of see the dots and how they joined. And that's kind of the journey I've been on.
Yeah, I think I had a similar path. And you often find that, yeah, there's lots of transferable skills that you pick up along the way. We're going to go into the weeds on Barb, but I think just so we set up the conversation, could you give me a very high level overview of what Barb is?
So we position ourselves as the industry's standard for understanding what people watch, and our responsibility is to deliver a trusted set of audience measurement data to all sides of the industry. And the data fulfill three really important purposes. Firstly, it allows advertisers to account for their investment in advertising on linear and VOD services. The second purpose is the media companies who invest in program content. They use our data to justify which shows to commission, which to buy, where to distribute them. And the third really important purpose is that our data are used to actually hold advertisers and media companies to account for their responsibilities to society, which are set out in prevailing regulation. So that's what our data are for.
And you are, of course, a JIC, a Joint Industry Committee. Just in case people don't understand what a JIC is, it's essentially an organisation set up by various different market participants to come together to solve a problem. So who owns Barb?
Well, we don't have any shareholders at all. We're a private company limited by guarantee. What's happened is six organisations have gone into what's called a members agreement. And that members agreement underpins our ability on behalf of the industry to commission long-term contracts for audience measurement that fulfills the three purposes I just talked to. And the IPA, which is the trade body for media agencies, they're a really important component of this agreement. And then there are five broadcasters, BBC, Channel 4, Channel 5, ITV and Sky. And they're on the hook for everything we do. But many other companies are interested in our data. So we have a wide range of subscribers and licensees who buy our data as well.
So, yeah, sometimes they get referred to as members. They're not. So how are these, you know, non-broadcaster or non-IPA companies affiliated with Barb?
The members are the kind of six who underwrite. That's the language we use. All the other interested parties we call subscribers or licensees. And that covers lots of broadcasters. It covers pure play VOD operators. It covers video sharing platforms. It covers Ofcom. They buy our data. Production companies that produce analytics services to the people who use our data. So there's a really wide range of companies that are interested in buying our data and working with it.
So, I mean, one of the things that, you know, I hear, and we're very much a publication that, you know, sits at that, this sounds very cheesy, but we sit at that intersection of, you know, digital and TV. And we often bring those people together on stage at events and all the rest of it. And I think there's fewer fights between them these days, but it's often a bit of friction there. And a lot of people from the digital side of the fence don't have a huge amount of faith in panel-based measurement. They see this as something that's a bit archaic. And yeah, I'm curious about what's your defense. I'm sure you encountered the same questions. But those digital people who sort of feel like digital measurement offers far more granularity, you know, user level interaction, impression level data. What's the role of panel based measurement in this world?
Yeah, I mean, there's a clue in the sort of the first line to the first question you asked, which is what we're for, and we describe ourselves as the industry's standard for understanding what people want. And the people bit's really important. Whether you're an advertiser or a media company, you want to know how people are behaving, and focusing on consumer behavior is a mantra for many marketeers. And big data sourced from devices is very helpful, but it doesn't replace the need for independent observational research on what people watch. And that research needs to represent the breadth of society. And I would say, though, we're actually big fans of big data. And the panel is at the heart of what we do. But actually, for 9 years now, we've been harvesting data directly from the devices that people use to watch BBC iPlayer, ITVX, Now TV. And we're collecting sort of census-level viewing data to those services, and we're integrating it with the panel. And then it's about using the complementary strengths of the two sources. So the big data gives us really good, accurate, robust measures of the volume of viewing, and the panel gives us really good, independent insight into what type of people are watching, and quite importantly, how many people are in front of the device, which probably doesn't make much of a difference if you're talking about watching on a mobile. And if you're in a living room in front of a big screen, and that seems to be the screen that viewers and advertisers are particularly interested in, then you need to know how many people are in the room and what type of people they are. And that's where the panel sort of brings along sort of things that are really complementary to the big data that we're also working with. So I wouldn't say it's either or, and to use a phrase I think Mark Ritson might have coined, it's the power of bothism, both panel data and digital data sourced from the devices that people are using to watch.
Yeah, I've been, you know, I've no skin in the game, but I have been a defender of panel-based measurement and the role that it can play. And I think when, you know, we've had huge problems with fraud or with extremely fishy results from certain platforms, I think a lot of that would come to light had panel-based measurement been deployed a bit more widely beyond TV.
You'd be surprised to hear I agree with you.
Suspected you might. But when it comes to, you know, the membership composition, you've obviously got you have five broadcasters in the IPA. I mean, that might sometimes lead people to think that, you know, it's but biased towards the needs of broadcasters. Is that something that, yeah, is it a common misconception, do you think? Or, yeah, maybe it's not a misconception.
Well, the way that I look at this, and going back to the three purposes I sort of talked about earlier, kind of helping businesses account for their investment in advertising, helping media companies account for their investment in program content, and holding advertisers and media companies to account for their societal responsibilities. I look at it that Barb's acting in the public interest of the wider industry that relies on our data. And the IPA is one of our members, which means our decision-making is very much a joint industry process. And the other thing I'd say is that I speak quite regularly, as you might imagine, with counterparts in other countries, not just in Europe, but around the world. And Barb is, without wishing to be modest, we're very progressive. And I think a really good example is we kind of really made the running in the world to measure audiences for organizations that compete with the established broadcasters. And I'm talking about the likes of Netflix, I'm talking about the likes of YouTube, TikTok, Disney Plus, Amazon Prime Video. We're not only actively measuring these media companies, but they're getting involved in what we do. And we made a very a small but important change corporately last year, because, I mean, everybody calls us Barb, but what what some of you might not know is the BARB for many years has been an acronym, and the first B stood for broadcaster. And so what we did at the beginning of last year is just shortly after Netflix signed up, we formally changed our company name. We're no longer an acronym. We got rid of any reference to broadcaster in our company name. We're now officially called BARB Audiences, or BARB to our friends.
And I mean, one of the similar, I'm surfacing every complaint I've ever heard about BARB, which but I think it's important, partly because often I know the answers to these questions, but I know smaller publishers often struggle with the fact that they struggle to monetize when BARB doesn't monetize what are called zero rated spots, meaning they weren't really picked up in a significant way by the BARB panel. Is this still a problem, or is this something that you're able to solve?
It's something we're working on, and one part of our solution is to build a bigger panel. And we've just built out our panel to 7,000 homes. That's short of 16,000 people. That's an increase of 40% on where we were just over a year ago. And that kind of reduces some of the variability, and it does mean that you get less zero rated spots. But the other part of our solution, which we're now sort of really focused on, is to bring other sources of big data in to the mix as well. We're running a tender right now for what we call BARB Panel Plus. And the idea is we collect sort of big data from organizations that are sort of pulling data directly from the devices people are using to watch, particularly thinking about the TV sets here. I'm sure listeners will kind of think of some of the companies who might be able to provide that kind of data to us. And the intention is, once we've worked out which data source we're going to commit to, it's then how do you integrate that with the panel data in a way that meets a number of objectives. And one of the biggest objectives is that point that you've highlighted, Vinny, which is to reduce the number of zero rating spots. So we're working on it, and I feel optimistic that we'll make good progress in the next couple of years on that.
And I think it might be interesting to get into the practical side of things. I can remember being at a Kantar event, and they produced a meter which was going to people's homes. Everybody got strangely excited by the sight of one. I think a lot of people don't really understand. They know that the data exists, they know that there's a panel somewhere. But I mean, you know, firstly, you know, how do you go about creating a panel? I mean, I know you haven't had to do it from scratch in recent years. I suppose you have in terms of extending your panel. But you know, how do you select the homes, for example, to make sure that you've got a good cross-section of society?
We run this thing. It's called an establishment survey, and we commissioned Ipsos to deliver this. So every week they interview over 1,000 homes randomly selected around the country. And they ask a range of questions about sort of what kind of TV platforms are owned, demography of the homes, take up of sort of SVOD services, things like that. And the questions, the answers we get to that help us do a couple of things. One is it gives us a constantly updated picture of what representative needs to look like. But it also helps us identify homes that we might want to get onto the panel. And so when Ipsos is doing the interview, they've got a... there's a sort of underlying sort of probability matrix. And after they've asked all the questions, the interviewer might get this message on the screen saying, we need to try and recruit this home. So they then turn into recruitment and a recruitment questionnaire to try and get the home onto the panel. And we get about 20% of homes sort of change on a yearly basis. And about... Of that 20%, three quarters of people saying, look, we don't want to do this anymore. So we want to get off the panel. But the other part of that, so about a quarter of the 20%, is us actively moving homes off the panel and getting other types of homes on to make sure that the panel is balanced.
I actually did an interview at my door to be a part of the panel, and they found that my involvement in the industry was a conflict. I was quite impressed that they dug that out and were able to eliminate me. What does an actual, one of these meters, like, what does it look like, or what does it do? And, once it goes into their home, what does the person actually have to do with it?
Well, there's two types of meters. There's ones that go on the TV set, and there's one that goes on the Wi-Fi router. So the Wi-Fi router meter, it's a tiny kind of rectangular thing, and you plug it into the router and then you don't do anything with it, and you just sort of leave it out of sight as much as you can. The TV set meter is like a small tablet device, and it has these avatars on there, and you can, as a panel member, you can personalize your avatar. And whenever you go into a room, you start watching TV, or if you go into a room where the TV set's already on and somebody else is watching, you have to, on the little tablet, you just press your avatar to say, "I'm now in the room watching." And then when you turn the TV off, or if you leave the room, you then press the avatar again to say, "I'm no longer watching." So that's the only thing they have to do differently.
I mean, how do you factor in, how do you mitigate for the person who, doesn't engage with, how many people are in the room, or, they come back drunk from the pub and turn on the TV and fall asleep in front of the couch, or what, how do you mitigate for, people not fully, actively taking part?
One of our contractors, RSMB, part of their role is constantly monitoring the levels of what we call uncovered viewing. So the TV set's on, but apparently nobody's in front of it. And just from years and years of experience, we know there is a certain level of uncovered viewing, which is probably genuine and probably acceptable. But when you see individual homes, maybe the uncovered viewing is going up, day after day, you ring the home and sort of check that everything's all right and try to re-educate them. And there are occasions where homes get moved off the panel because they just sort of, they fail to comply with what they're meant to be doing. So some of that churn I talked about earlier might be us moving homes off the panel because they're just not complying well enough.
And for the panelists, what motivates them to join the panel? Not that TV measurement isn't a beautiful thing in its own right, but is this something, what's the value exchange for them?
Well, a big sort of part of the recruitment process is helping them understand that by being part of this, they're going to get more of the kinds of programs they like to watch. And people actually genuinely, over the years I've been involved in the business, which is too many now, but they're genuinely interested in answering questions about what they watch and taking part in research about telly. So part of it is then thinking, we're going to get more of the telly we like by doing this. But there is, I mean, you kind of need to give people a bit of a financial incentive, and they sort of get points which go towards vouchers. And over the course of a year, a family of four might get about £250 worth of vouchers. And some of them, quite a few of them, I think, sort of store these up and sort of cash them all in about October time to just help with the cost of Christmas.
And do you ever encounter situations where, somebody's using, you get the, I think, what's colloquially called a dodgy box, and they're getting, 10,000 TV channels from around the world. Is that something that you would seek to filter out, or is it like, okay, that's actually just quite interesting to us that you're doing that, and that gives us interesting data that is relevant?
So very much the latter. I mean, we're interested in all uses of the TV set, and we have this thing, we call it unidentified viewing. So we know the TV set's on, we know people are watching, but we can't actually work out what the content is. And we kind of had, going back 5-6 years, unidentified viewing was growing hugely, because at that time we couldn't identify Netflix and YouTube and things like that. But when we were able to identify them, unidentified viewing sort of dropped really sharply. But there's still a bit of it that goes on. And yeah, we recognize that people like to maybe use a satellite dish to get TV channels from other countries. And the industry that we work with are always looking to understand that unidentified viewing. Can we get it down? But yeah, we do try to cover off as much of the use of the TV set as we can.
And as a JIC, you know, is your position sort of kind of locked into the market, do you think? Or do you feel like you're facing increasing competition, particularly from the, you know, we've got the new range of measurement tech companies across the board? We're hearing about things like hybrid measurement and yeah. What's your feeling? Do you feel like you're seeing more competition?
Well, I think, I mean, in terms of our position, I mean, so the members agreement that I talked about at the top, which, I mean, that's kind of signed and sealed until the end of 2029. So in that sense, we've got, as Barb, long-term stability. But we can't be complacent. I mean, it's an ever-changing industry. As you say, there's lots of players coming into the market with data that promises to measure things in ways that things have never been measured before. And I often use the analogy that Barb's kind of an ecosystem as much as anything. And one of the most misquoted lines of all time is what Charles Darwin said. And what he spoke about was survival of the fit, not the fittest. And what he was getting at is that the things that survive are the things that continually adapt to fit into the changing environment. And I sort of carry that very much in mind as we sort of navigate our way forwards. And I think we've come a long way over the last 12 years. If you look back to our definition of total viewing 12 years ago and what it is now, it's a really quantum shift. And we need to keep moving and keeping up to speed with the different ways people can watch, the different ways people want to use the data. So on one hand, we're in a relatively stable position, but certainly no complacency in terms of thinking the job's done, because it's not.
And I mean, just staying on the theme of competitors, I'm curious about what's happening with Origin. I should probably explain what Origin is for those who don't know. So the World Federation of Advertisers, the WFA, they created a framework aimed at cross-media measurement at a variety of North Stars where that advertisers wanted to get to with measurement and cross-media measurement. There's a UK iteration of the WFA framework, which is one of the sort of pioneers globally. The US has an equivalent, but Origin is ISBA's version. They're aiming to basically pull in data from lots of different sources for cross-media measurement. I know that there's been a little bit of a public controversy. We've done panels about it in the past with you and Origin on stage. And I know that there's been, I've been told multiple times privately, I don't think it's particularly a massive secret that the broadcasters have a number of concerns. I'm curious, you know, Barb data seems like a natural fit for Origin and being able to sort of extend what they're doing. What's the state of play? And maybe we can dig into the broadcaster concerns afterwards.
And well, Barb is committed to working with ISBAR on the use of our data within the Project Origin solution. We're not engaged in the actual decision-making process. And we know that there are strong voices in the Origin decision-making process on the buy side, that the Barb data should be an integral part of the solution. And I think that's because the buyers want to invest with confidence. But Barb has consistently sort of delivered a trustworthy and transparent single source of truth. And that's given advertisers and media agencies the ability to invest in television advertising with confidence. And if you have more than one version of the truth, it can go to undermine confidence. And actually, just a bit of history, which I hope listeners might find interesting. I had reason the other day to dig out a letter from 1978, which was jointly written by the then chair of the BBC and the chair of the ITCA, which was like the essentially the forerunner to ITV. And they were writing to the then Home Secretary, setting out plans for putting Barb into action. And just reading the letter, there are some phrases in that which are as true today as they were then. So there's a point about the need to avoid disparate audience claims. There's a point about meeting in full the requirements of the advertisers, establishing common data sources. And here's what I like, not differing on matters that shouldn't be open to more than one interpretation. So that's our moment of conception as Barb, and that's what's baked into how we do things. And so we've been with that sort of at the heart of our genetic matter is how we deliver a shared language. And there is a real risk, I think, in the industry that if you end up with more than one version of the truth, that shared language starts to fracture and it becomes more difficult for people to understand each other. On the broadcast concerns, I mean, they're rooted very much in the broadcaster's experience of working a joint industry solution. So they're looking at things like how the input's audited, to what extent the outputs are consistent, and to what extent the outputs are available to all in the industry. So, I think the broadcast kind of rooted in that sort of in that genetic mindset of how joint industry things work and the importance of shared language.
Is there also, I mean, whilst it is the, you know, ISBA organizing it in response to the WFA framework, I know that part of the suspicion might be, you know, the fact that a number of the sort of large tech companies are heavily involved and have been highly influential in creating it. Now, that's not to say that there's necessarily anything dodgy going on or anything else, but I know that many people have said to me, and it's something I've spoken about publicly at events, is that there's a concern that, you know, their high quality ad, you know, maybe shown during the Olympics or whatever, you know, a premium event that's 30 seconds long, you've got a family viewing, that reach, you know, is there's a possibility that that reach could be compared to somebody, you know, spinning past a, you know, a display ad in their social feed. Is that, you know, I think you said something to similar effect in articles you've written in the past. Is the apples to apples thing an ongoing concern, or is there a way around that?
I think it's a really important point. And if you look at the WFA principles, which actually could have been written about Barb, we share a lot of their principles. One of their principles is consistent audience building block, which is essentially what the apples with apples idea is. And from our perspective, we sort of not only believe in that very strongly, but to your point about the sort of the environment in which ads are seen, we've always reported the editorial context in which ads are seen on television. And so it's not just apples with apples metrics. It's also about consistent insight into the editorial environment that your ad's being watched in. And so we see two really important questions. Can the industry align on metrics? And can the industry align on the content that's reported? Now, for us as Barb, we've sort of pragmatically taken the position that we're okay with the idea that Barb data, which, and for listeners who aren't familiar with this, we report commercial exposures effectively based on 100% viewed through. But we've sort of said, well, we're sort of okay with the idea that our data can be integrated with any source that uses the MRC cross-media standard for video measurement, which is at least 2 seconds and 100% of pixels in view. Now, that's kind of apples with pears. But what we are doing as Barb is we're now on a journey to move our way of reporting data that we can report more granular exposure to ads, and on the agenda is, can we, as well as reporting linear ads that are 100% viewed through, could we report linear ads that are viewed to that MRC cross-media standard as well? So we get to a more pure apples with apples future.
Okay, moving on from Origin, I'm curious about, you know, that there's various players in the market market their own homework, which I don't think in itself is, you know, a crime. If you're dealing with a customer and they're asking you what the numbers are, it's quite reasonable if you have that data available to give them to you. But I also know people who've been pulling out their hair, where, you know, it was from one particular tech platform, which I won't name because this is secondhand information, and that they were just blindly trusting numbers, which this person felt was quite obviously very deeply misleading. I mean, what do you make of this? That, you know, where we see often very large companies, just offering self-reported numbers as gospel.
Well, it's not new. I mean, I've been around and about media advertising for 40 years, and media owners have always kind of commissioned research to portray their own offering in a favourable light. And the thing I would say to anybody who's kind of being presented with data is, and we have to remember that the idea that raw data is an oxymoron. Every single data set is compiled and collated according to somebody's values. And clearly, if the data are being compiled and collected by a media owner or a platform or whoever, and they're sort of generating the data themselves, then you've got to look at what they're trying to achieve to sort of help you understand the values that have gone into compiling the data. And where I think Barb has a notable and a very important point of difference is that our values are the collective values of the industry. Our values are shaped by both buyers and sellers of advertising. And that's a fundamental part of the joint industry ethos, is that we're putting data together which doesn't, with methodologies that don't prejudice for or against any of the services that we report. So I think data users would do well to look to joint industry research as a really good, solid, reliable source of the truth.
Yeah. And I think there's good reason for joint industry collaboration to, you know, come up with something that everybody trusts. I think it's great. The JICs do reputation sometimes for being a bit slow, and I've heard that set of JICs in multiple markets. Is that true in your opinion?
Well, the thing to remember is these things aren't easy. It's hard to get these things right. And if we're going to maintain our reputation for trust and trustworthiness, then we got to be right. If we didn't care about the quality, we could move really quickly. But what I would say is, and then again, forgive the sort of the banging of the barbed drum, but I mean, in the last, if you go back to 2019, just 5 years ago, we've delivered an enormous amount since then, bringing on board all the pure play VODs and the video sharing data and awarding contracts to take us through to the end of the decade and building out the panel. And we're continuously evolving. I would mount a defense to say we can take time to get things right, but the moment trust leaves, and trust could leave very, very quickly, it takes a long time to get it back. So we do have to, on behalf of the industry who kind of owns our data, we've got to get it right for everybody.
Yeah, and what were the challenges with, you know, getting on the VOD services, or, you know, SVOD, VOD, Netflix, Disney Plus, Amazon, YouTube? What was the challenge in getting them on board or starting to measure their output?
Well, they're two slightly different processes. So we went about sort of measuring their services before we'd sort of got their commitment to become subscribers. And so in a sense, it was a build it and they will come. And each of the conversations was slightly different. And these are all big American platform, but TikTok is not American, but they all have slightly different nuances in the conversations we have with them, and some of them have come on board and bought our data and are now looking to collaborate with us to go to the next step, particularly around what I guess we can call AVOD, the ad tiers on the likes of Netflix and Amazon Prime Video and Disney, and we're sort of making progress in those conversations. So we kind of did what we could independently, and when they came on board, we can sort of really look to collaborate more strategically to build out the data we report for them. And it's probably worth going back to how we're governed. There's nothing to prevent any organization saying, actually, I want to go from being a licensee to becoming one of the members and having a longer term commitment to delivering Barb. And if ever anybody asked me that question, I said, well, yeah, absolutely, that conversation can happen. But there are two things you need to bear in mind. There's one thing we're not going to change, which is our operating principles. But there's another thing we do need to change, which is we need to keep developing new ways of measuring new things, and you need to be committed to working with us and helping us on that.
One of the things that came up earlier in the year at New Video Frontiers was this this definition when it comes to classifying content as being fit for TV. And I know that this is something that I've heard serious complaints from people on the video sharing platform side. And I think one of the examples that came up in New Video Frontiers was Mr. Beast content, which I think to many people, you'll look at that, it's extremely well produced. He is involved in huge controversies at the moment. I say controversies because it seems that there's various different complaints about Mr. Beast's his way of operating. But in terms of the content, the output certainly very good in terms of production values. I'm curious about how this fit for what this fit for TV definition is, and you know, is it something that you know is ultimately designed to suit broadcasters, or yeah, is there something else there?
Well, so what we've committed to as Barb is to say we're committed to reporting all content on YouTube and other video sharing platforms that meets industry agreed definitions for brand safety. There's obviously a live conversation now about what comes after GARM. But I imagine there'll be something which kind of provides an industry framework for agreeing what's brand safe. What the fit for TV idea is, it goes a bit further than that and just says, well, it's not only brand safe, but actually it's to your words, there's strong production values. And importantly, the content could appear on a regulated service. So could a Mr. Beast video, could that appear on Channel 4 or ITV or whatever? And we did some work last year where we were sort of showing people examples of various videos. And I have to say, I'm not a Mr. Beast expert. I've watched a few, and by and large, I think they do fit that definition of fit for TV. But there was one example which we showed to a sort of a panel of people from across the industry, and somebody pointed out that partway through the video, Mr. Beast started promoting his own line of chocolate, which would be under sort of the regulations that wouldn't be allowed inside a TV program on a regulated service. So on that basis, on a technicality, that one particular example of Mr. Beast wouldn't have met that fit for TV criteria, although it remains brand safe and good production values. And so, and the reason for looking to do this is, and it goes back to what I was saying earlier about advertisers and agencies wanting to know the editorial environment in which their ads are being seen, and our commitment to doing brand safe as the entry point recognises there's a lot of brand safe content out there which isn't necessarily, to use our definition, fit for TV. But people want to be able to identify the higher quality content as well.
Yeah, I think the example of promotion within a show, I think there's lots of allegations surrounding around, you know, manipulating children and all sorts of product integrations that aren't entirely ethical. There's questions around some of the things that he does in terms of its there's an element of lottery to it as well. It feels like there's not a huge amount of ethics in the production. I feel like that is something that social and any social platform is going to be, that, you know, just allows people to publish at will, is always going to be open to bad actors pursuing things in a way that aren't necessarily ethical, or they could be ethical in one market and not in another. I know product placement, for example, is something that's perceived very differently depending on what part of the world you're in. What's your greatest, you know, bugbear when about measurement today? What bugs you, and you could just maybe wave a magic wand and solve it today if you could?
I think going back a bit to the question you asked earlier about the sort of the either or kind of panel data or big data, I think this idea that device data has got an unchallenged primacy in our world, I think that's a challenge. And to what I said earlier, we see a very important role for that kind of data, but it has to be part of a bothism solution. So it's both panel data and device data. That's, I think, probably the biggest bugbear. And I talked about how we're trying to, as Barb, sort of walk the walk on this, not just talk the talk. And we have already been working with big data and device data and panel data for best part of 10 years now. We want to keep moving forward on that.
And in terms of, you know, developments from your side, what are you most excited about in terms of Barb? You've got your license in place until 2029. What's the what can we expect to see over the next 5 years?
Well, we've got to keep on keeping on. But the one thing I would, and we haven't really talked about this bit of what we're doing at the moment, we're fundamentally redesigning our data distribution strategy. And for many years, we've sort of delivered flat files to the industry, and there's loads of companies out there who take the flat files and create new databases that meet the needs of users. And for a variety of reasons, we think it's time to do things differently and just say, look, there's going to be one central data hub that Barb manages and controls, and users have to go into that to get the data they need. I mean, among other things, it's good for the planet because, frankly, there are too many databases out there being created using our data. And so we're looking to sort of be like everybody, do what we can for sustainability purposes. And that's a really big one. And it's also linked to on our roadmap, we've got this move to what we call second by second measurement. So this is more granular reporting of the data. And that will require a fundamental redesign across the industry of the infrastructure that supports trading. So this is a really big project. It's not the kind of thing you can say, right, here's a 6-month project plan. Let's get it delivered before Christmas. So this is a multi-year project, and it's a really important one for the future of how people access Barb data and do it in a way that helps them do their jobs easily as possible.
So finally, I give every guest $10 million to invest. It could be a company or it can be a space. It's no problem at all. It's we're happy for our event profits to be distributed to our podcast guests. Where would you invest it and why?
So going back to when I sort of first got into media and I looked at the word marketing and found myself as a marketing exec, and you get given all this research data, and I found myself, there were two types of people when given a set of research data. Those who think, what's the methodology? How is it collected? How is it compiled? How can we be sure it's as accurate as possible? And the second, which I fell into, was how do we take the data and help ourselves make better business decisions? And so that's kind of at the core of my sort of interest. And so I'd probably invested in a software company that kind of is there to create the interfaces for organizations to pull in data from the sources that they need and to present it in a way that really takes the legwork out of pulling what you need together to help make better decisions and frankly enable people to spend less time sourcing data and more time discussing what they're going to do as a result of what the data tells them.
Well, I have to say, having been exposed to research, you know, doing small scale research in comparison to what you do at Barb, there's a huge amount of reticence to share data for understandable commercial reasons. I suppose that a JIC is a handy workaround in that people buy into it, but then they're also getting something back from it. Even just trying to break out how much money a company is making from a certain part of their business, they're very reluctant to share that. I think it's a great idea, but I think these things are often quite harder than it's harder than it looks, I think. But I think, having a panel that's independent of the companies themselves is probably a good workaround.
It's worked for many years, and the trick is to keep it relevant and topical and up to date.
Justin, as I expected, that was an absolute pleasure, and thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you. I look forward to getting the £10 million.
Cheers. I'll check it's in the post. Yeah.
That's great. Have a good day.